We're all on time today.
We're all on time.
We're all on time, everybody. We're all on time. My God, this is so exciting.
That is not that rare of a thing. We're a very prompt
crew. But we were very eager for one of us to be late. We were excited. We were like giddy about, oh, Glenn's in the office, but he's not in the room
yet. We're going to get him.
It's going to happen again. Absolutely. There was going to be 180 of these things, mm-hmm. right? I mean, mm-hmm. it's going to happen.
Yeah.
I will never be late again.
You think so?
Oh, I can guarantee it.
Okay. Oh.
Ooh, that's a Megan, bold you're hearing this? Claim.
That is a bold claim.
There's
got to be a
it.
Small part of you that's regretting making that claim.
You can't actually. No. You can't actually guarantee it.
Of course not.
How can you guarantee it? There could be some sort of catastrophe.
Yes.
It could be a tire situation. Yeah. You know.
Speaking of catastrophes,
I'll call in a bomb threat. To Carousel. I got a flat tire. Then I'll just randomly, anonymously call in a bomb threat.
Who do you call?
To the people of Carousel. That's the building. To Jeff Luini. I'll say, I'm stalking. Hello.
Do it. Yeah. What? Yes.
Continue.
Yes.
Continue.
Continue. Yeah. No. Sorry. Who is this?
It would have to be a bad accent because you don't want them to know where you're from.
That's why it's a bad accent.
Hello. I'm stalking Glenn Howerton.
Hello. There's a bomb in your building.
There's two of you?
There's a bomb. I'm
calling about a different bomb.
Why is there a child on this call?
I'm not a child.
Guys, this episode is fantastic. I'm very happy. I'm very pleased with our show. Not this podcast.
Good. I'm glad that you're enjoying the episodes.
Dennis
now.
And Dee go on welfare. I feel like we're really hitting our stride with the show at this point. No?
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think this one and the one just before it, The Gang Goes Jihad, are sort of really strong examples of where we were headed with this show. I mean, it's one of the first that with The Gang Goes on Welfare, it really starts to feel like the show in many ways to me.
There were aspects of this episode that I felt, though, we were leaning too hard into displaying that these characters were awful people. Like that.
Yes.
What do you mean? Like the bathroom scene?
Yes, like the bathroom scene.
But see, okay, so one of the things I will say, you're not totally wrong about that, because it is very, very despicable. But one of the things that I really like about that is that it's that first taste of like the characters just being so completely and totally oblivious. Not only oblivious to their behavior, but actually thinking that they're the opposite. You know what I mean? Like, you guys are literally saying, like, oh, we're good guys. I'm a good guy. We're right. good guys. We're good people. We're getting, you know, and then you just spray her in the face. You're not doing it on purpose.
I can't.
But you're oblivious to the fact that you've done that.
Yeah, I don't mind it, like, in terms of what we're going for. I just felt like the execution was like, it's like too on the nose. Like,
yeah.
that it's like too.
I hear you, but I can't tell you how many times I posted something. I think I talked about it in the last two podcasts ago, where I said something to the effect of somebody said to me that they don't like my shows. Talking about Mythic Quest and Sunny, because they can't tell who the good people are and who the bad people are.
You told me about that. Okay, right? This is hilarious.
Okay, so I posted that on Twitter, and it got like a massive response, which was great, because it was generally from the people who like, you know, the people who follow you on Twitter, the people who like your shows.
Right.
And yet there were a lot of people, like maybe thousands of people, who were saying things like, I didn't get Sunny at first until I understood what you were doing. Now to us, it was like so obvious. We felt like we were making it so obvious from the very beginning, but I think it takes a little getting used to. And
yeah,
I think episodes like this, where you're like, we lean into it so heavily that these people are so cruel. To the point where, like, I think my favorite part of the episode, which is so on the nose, is when Frank says, he's talking to the quote unquote slaves and says, wait a second, you don't drink, you work hard. How did you get into the position you're in?
Yeah,
and when
she tries
to answer him,
he
goes, hold on, honey, and then turns around. I'm like, okay. I feel like at this point, what we're basically saying exactly what the show is.
Well,
and it might be a little heavy-handed, but I think maybe
that I didn't mind so much. That joke, I feel like, is a little more subtle. There was just like one or two where I was like, "All right, we're leaning so hard into it." But look, overall, I love the episode. These are little things, but from a production value standpoint, I really love the episode. Like having Dennis and Dee on that stoop in Philly, the scene where they go to buy crack, that street, how authentically Philly those scenes are.
And half the episode was shot in Philly.
Yeah.
Look at how many scenes were shot exterior Philly.
And it's a little bit of a disservice to the show when we don't do that. But, you know, it got more difficult as we had kids and families.
What do you mean? We do that.
Right. Right.
We do.
Oh, this, sorry. Yeah, you guys do it.
This was the first episode I remember pitching it to FX. This was the first time I remember pitching this, mm-hmm. where they said, we don't know about this.
Really? Yeah, what was
even in the first season where we changed, we talked about this already, where we changed the
priest to the gym teacher,
they were still into the storyline. This one, when I remember very distinctly being in Venice, at the apartment that you and I shared in Venice, mm-hmm. Not Italy, Venice, California,
yeah,
Muscle Beach, home of Muscle Beach. And I pitched it to Nick Grad, who's our executive, and I said, I think we're going to get Dennis and Dee addicted to crack. He was like, nah, man, nah, you can't do that. And I'm like, well, no, let me explain to you why. And then I explained to him why, and he's like, well, now you definitely can't do it. And I was like, no, we're going to do it. We're going to do it. And he's like, I don't think you should do it. And then we wound up writing the script. And it just worked, and it was so funny, and they let us do it.
I mean, I've talked to numerous people who said early on, you know, like, I'm talking about, like, when we were in season 5 or 6 or 7, and they were telling me, my buddies and I are super into the show. I started watching it, and I showed them the show, and then they got into it. I would always ask, what episode did you show them to get them into the show? And more often than not, it was this episode. It was The Gang Goes on Welfare. I'm not totally sure why. It must have been something... that episode, I think, was the first episode to really strike a chord with people and hook people.
Well, how about this? Like, right in the very beginning, Dennis and Dee say, we have dreams, we're going to go pursue them, and here's how we're going to go do it. And then Dee says, I'm going to sign us up for unemployment benefits.
Right.
And then Dennis and just like, no, come on, let's go, we're going to follow our dreams. And then you find out that you're getting $400 a week. That's more than you made at the bar, right? Mm-hmm. So this is literally something that the country is struggling with right now, that the minimum wage is so low, mm-hmm. and the cost of living is so high, and that right now, even though that we're coming out of the pandemic, people don't want to go back to work because their unemployment benefits are higher than the minimum wage.
Yeah.
So this is literally something that we're still continuing to struggle with.
Yeah.
And the shit that they're talking about later, when Maria starts to try to explain it to Frank and Frank doesn't want to hear it, is like exactly what the show is.
Right, right, right. It's a shame too, because I thought we'd solved it. I thought we'd solved it.
We solved it on Sunny, yeah.
You know definitely. You know what I think we did solve? Did we solve the Korea situation? No, we didn't, did we? Damn it, we haven't solved... Have we solved anything?
Well, he died. The guy died.
There's now still,
yeah, but then there's still
an
Oon.
There's still an Oon in there.
Yeah, there's an Oon.
I feel like...
there's always going
to
be an Oon.
This was the first time we really nailed going to the title. Where the going to the title is such a good right. joke. Don't worry about us. We're going to be just fine. Bing, Destiny, go welfare.
Yeah.
Like, that was the first time we really...
I remember you telling me Jimmy Simpson reached out to you and told you that. And, like, said that he, like, laughed out loud. I remember you telling me that and being like, well,
really?
That's a high bar.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Jimmy is a tough critic for a comedy. I remember he, like, reached out to you and said that.
Oh, really? Laugh oh, that's out loud, great. Which oh, is good.
Good. That's awesome.
And the guest cast is so good.
Yeah. Yeah,
like all the guest cast is so good in this episode. The woman who played the woman at the welfare store,
Aisha Hines
is
Aisha
so
Hines
good.
Is great
yeah.
in that scene.
Every time she pops up in something, I get excited. She's such a great actress. She's great in the episode. I love how real she plays. My favorite thing when our guest cast comes in and just plays a very real, grounded person that is encountering maniacs
and can still you know what I mean? Make it funny
and can still make it funny yeah and so, there are very few actors weirdly that can do that. They can play it straight, play it real, play it grounded, and yet and understand that what's funny about it is their reaction to the insanity that's being displayed in front of them. And you know, it's so funny because you know a lot of comic actors want to come in and like make it funny, and it's like no, it will be funny if you just react honestly to the insanity that you're witnessing.
Yeah, but it helps if you're a person whose honest reaction looks funny.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. like there's a version of that same woman who plays that part and does it totally honestly, but doesn't
have... It ain't funny.
Yeah. It ain't funny.
And yet Aisha's performance is very, very funny.
It's knowing how long to pause before you react to the line, and it's all that.
Yeah.
Kind of, it's like the timing
thing. Well, like her reaction to Dee grabbing the pen. Mm-hmm. Is very it's very real, very funny, and I don't think that was a scripted moment. I think it just happened, and she reacted that way because she's funny.
Here's the thing that stood out to me. So when we asked for the book of people's images, and it's called a Facebook.
Yeah,
yes. Yeah.
Did we invent Facebook?
No.
What?
No, it had already been invented, but we didn't know about. I certainly did not know that. I'd never heard of Facebook at that time, so that was that had nothing to do with Facebook. For me.
No, it had to do with a Facebook.
That's how they came up with a book of faces.
That's how they came up with the name of the company.
That's right. Right. Yeah. Right.
So we were using it the way that people traditionally have been using that word, and so did Zuck.
Zuck.
Yeah, but yeah. I think we might have some legal recourse here. If we take this scene to a court of law and say, hey, God, we had it first. We might have some Winklevoss kind of money coming our way.
Some
Winklevossy money coming our way.
Winklevossian.
I would say that probably the second, or maybe third most popular meme from our show comes from this particular episode.
The Bismarcky stoop moment.
No. No.
Okay.
Really?
Can you guess? Well, maybe I'm wrong.
I could be wrong, but
I've seen...
you guys in the top hats. Yes. I've seen that a lot. You guys in the top
crying,
hats.
Yeah, crying.
Oh, yeah.
Crying at the end. Yeah.
I think I have seen that pop up quite a few times.
There's the shots of Pat's and Gino's famous Philly cheesesteak places. Mm-hmm. Never again after season two, right? We had a little bit of it in season one and season two, seeing those locations, and then we're like, nah. After that?
I don't know. I don't feel like maybe we went back. Nah, maybe not.
Can I confess something to you guys?
Go ahead.
Oh, God.
I've never had a cheesesteak.
Yeah, we know.
I've never had one.
We know.
From anywhere.
We know.
Yeah. What do you mean?
What is it? The nitrates? What's holding you
back? Nitrates. I don't know what a nitrate is. I'll be honest. I don't know what that is either.
Delicious.
It's deliciousness.
Yeah.
No, at the time, when we were going to Philly a lot, like in those early seasons, we were near those steak sandwich. Mm. What are they called?
You weren't eating season two.
No, you weren't eating it. Yeah, you were eating food.
Come on, guys.
You were on some.
Come on, guys.
I didn't eat.
You were eating pepper and honey.
Yeah, you were having pepper water.
Oh, yeah,
and honey.
Yeah. You guys, I did the. Okay, let's talk about that. Let's get into it. I did the master cleanse. Biggest mistake of my life. What an absolute gut destroyer that was.
Yeah.
That was just awful, an awful experience through and through, and I wish I hadn't done it. Anyone who's thinking about doing the master cleanse, which is the lemon.
Don't get sued. Don't get sued by the master.
Oh, the master. It's the lemon. God, what is it? Paprika?
It's nothing.
No, I don't know.
It's starving yourself. And
it's lemon. It's
hot.
It's
I can remember
hot
what it
powder
was.
And honey.
Honey.
No,
yeah.
No, maple syrup. Maple syrup.
And paprika. Yeah. That was
and you just
one.
Eat yeah. that all day long. Eat it. it's awful. And it absolutely destroyed my intestines for about a year. I also lost way too much weight and looked so skinny in season two because I did it right. I think I did it while we were writing season two, which was also just torture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Torture. God, just don't do the master cleanse. I heard somebody saying they were going to do the master cleanse the other day, and I'm like, what year is it?
We played a baseball game, like a group of us for, I think it was my bachelor party.
Yes, it was.
And
yeah. Was I on the cleanse?
You were on the cleanse, and we did like shirts and skins. Or something with the teams. And when you popped your shirt off, we did shirt, skins, and bones. Like it was like playing baseball with a skeleton. And I was concerned. But you bounced back.
We wound up writing that into a whole episode, didn't we?
Yeah.
We did. Yeah.
You kept,
in the miracle episode, he's faint.
You were insisting that you felt great.
I did.
Yeah, you were.
No, but I did. I actually did.
Great.
No. But I would go through periods of extreme euphoria on that. Let's call it a diet. There were certain times of the day where I was really hungry, like in the morning and like
afternoon, evening.
And then you would hallucinate.
Well, I wasn't hallucinating. It did sustain. I mean, it does sustain you like in a weird way, you know, and I mean, I'm telling you, like, I think anyone who's fasted for a long period of time can tell you like there's like periods of like real euphoria. I mean, So in a way, I did actually feel amazing. There was just, it was only
that's
like
your
maybe,
body's defense mechanism to make dying not as bad.
It's possible.
It's like yeah. let's I ah fuck I'm dying. All right, give the guy some euphoria before this is all over.
Yeah.
Maybe making him okay. If we give him a little euphoria, he'll think that living is good and he'll eat something. Yeah.
right. Life's worth living.
Remember how fun living was?
I do remember the very first thing I had was like a handful of, like just a couple of like almonds. I had like a couple of almonds like when I was coming, because you have to ease yourself off of it. I did it for 10 days.
And you orgasm?
No, I mean, I literally got so high off those almonds. It was absolutely insane. And then I had like vegetable broth after that. And I was so fucking high off of that. It was unreal, man. It was incredible. Oh, guys, don't ever do it. Don't do it. There's no reason for it.
How do we segue into that?
I don't know. We were talking about something that I actually wanted to talk about. And then, you know.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Well, but that's
it. You were saying you never had a cheesesteak.
Oh, that's what it was.
I never had a cheesesteak. Yeah. Well, at the time, it was because I wasn't eating red meat. I didn't eat red meat for a very long time. Like for like, I don't know, 13, 14 years.
Yeah, we know.
Well, yes, but isn't for you, you fucking idiot.
You said, guys, I have to make a confession.
I've never had a cheesesteak.
Yeah, to me and Charlie. You're saying that to me and Charlie.
I've never told you guys that I've never had a cheesesteak. How do you know in the last... I started eating red meat again like 7 or 8 years ago. How the fuck do you know I haven't had a cheesesteak between now and then?
I can surmise based on knowing you for the last 17 years that you've never had a
cheesesteak. You guys are acting like you've never seen me eat like a breakfast burrito or a big pasta dish or like French fries. I eat that shit all the time.
That's true. You're back on it and it's encouraging to see. It's encouraging.
That's true, but I can still guess. If you laid out 10 things, if you laid out 10 things, like 10 shit foods.
Yeah.
Okay. And I know that you do eat some shit food from time to time. I bet you I could pick out which shit food you did eat and which you didn't. Okay.
What's scary about Rob is I feel like he knows shit about you or me better than we know about ourselves. Like he's spying on us in a way. Like
he's spying on us?
Well, yeah, are you
I'm
spying on us?
I'm collecting information
yes,
that I can use to leverage. No,
you're so weird.
I just notice.
No, so weird.
I notice what you eat and what you don't eat.
You notice things that maybe the other person
God, might
not
get know. Off me, you creep. Yeah. Jesus Christ. That's
he's
so
creeping
creepy.
On us all day over here.
I didn't realize you were so creepy. How did I not realize this until just now? You're so creepy. You're a creepy guy.
Name a junk food. No, we'll come up with a list.
Yeah, no, you know what? I bet I will, to give you credit, I would guess that you'd probably be right 9 out of 10 times the things that I would have versus the things that I wouldn't have.
Yeah.
You know, based on conversations we've had and you seeing my food preferences and certain things where I'm like, ew, you know, that's kind of gross and that, whereas this
salad
is
salad from a meal delivery service. Yes. McDonald's cheeseburger. No. Like some things are very...
Cheeseburger from a certain kind of restaurant? Yes.
Right.
Oh.
Cheeseburger from another kind of restaurant?
No.
No.
No. No.
And that's, I think, how most people eat food.
Yeah, and really not...
right?
Yeah, but you know, it's... Yeah, whatever. Guys. Ugh.
This it hit the nerve.
No.
No.
It's just, you know, I just don't like being portrayed as somebody who like literally never eats delicious food. I don't like that.
No, but you are more exacting and particular about your food than most people I know.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. No, I try to follow like, it's like the 90-10 rule. 90% of the time I eat extremely healthy and I don't eat for joy at all and don't really particularly enjoy what I'm eating. I eat it purely for health reasons. And then the other 10% of the time, I kind of eat whatever the fuck I want. And I think it's pretty good. Look, my doctor says my numbers look good.
You got your numbers good.
I'm going to live forever. 90% of the time, it's going to be miserable, but I'm going to live forever.
But 10% of the time, you'll enjoy 10% of your life.
And by the way, that 10% that I'm eating whatever the fuck I want, I guarantee you I enjoy it more than most people. Because
right.
I've deprived you myself the other 90% of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe, why don't you get it down to like 60-40? Then you can enjoy 40% of your life.
But then my numbers are going to go down.
Not necessarily. My numbers are fine. I eat whatever the fuck I want.
I bet you they're not. I bet your numbers aren't great.
Well, but I go to a real doctor.
Yes, so do I.
You go to a doctor somewhere who tests for things that don't even exist.
Wrong. I go to a Western medicine guy. Well,
let's compare numbers. That's what we should do. Ooh. That's what we should do.
Let's grab our sheets. Let's grab our graphs and our charts, and let's compare our blood, urine, and feces.
You will have to go to a neutral source, right?
You have to go to a third party.
To interpret the numbers.
I don't trust Glenn's doctor, whether he says it's Western or not.
Oh, you think he's
west
working
of
the
what?
Number? You think he's working the numbers?
Like, I got west of
where? West of Highland Boulevard.
You go far enough west. You go far enough west. If you go far enough west, you'll definitely
you'll
end up in the east.
Back east.
Guys, let's talk about the VIG. Do you guys know what a VIG? Wait, hold on. Charlie, your character doesn't know what a VIG is. Mm-hmm. Do you know what a VIG is?
To this day, I don't know.
You don't totally know what a VIG is.
Forgotten. I think maybe around the time we did the episode, we learned it, understood it, and then that goes under the deleted files
right.
for me.
We were all still watching The Sopranos at the time, so that was fresh in our heads.
What is it again?
It's the interest. That you pay
the
on
interest
the loan.
That you're paying on it's the illegal loan you've taken.
Vigorish. Yeah, so you buy...
It's
you,
short
you,
for what?
Vigorish.
Now, that I didn't know.
Yeah, it's...
Vigorish?
It's a Goomba word. Yeah, you borrow money from somebody on the street, like a gangster.
Vigorish? Shut the fuck up. It's not short for vigorish.
Do we have a fact check, Megan? Do we have a fact check?
Vigorish?
I'm going to give you a loan. It's going to be a bit vigorish. What's the vigorish on this loan?
What's the licorice? And then you pay, and then usually it's like 10 points, which is like 10%, and then you don't have to pay back the cap. You don't have to pay back the principal. You just have to pay back the 10 points. You borrow $100, and each week you can pay back 10.
Oh.
But that's on top of
the 100.
So as
long as you stay on top. Well, so VIG is just interest.
It's just interest. That's all it is.
Sort of. I mean, I guess it's different from interest insofar as it's not on the up and up.
Vigorish.
Nice work. How did you know that?
Gangster stuff. I'm into gangster stuff. I read about all that shit. Yeah.
What do you mean? Like, you've read books about like the mafia.
I'm literally in the middle of another gangster book. I just love it. I don't know why. It's like a fascinating subject to me.
You should make a gangster show.
There's so many good ones that have already been done. I can't do it like
that. Are you allowed to make a gangster show?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you mean? You could do an Irish gangster show.
Irish gangsters.
No,
you couldn't. Could you do a show about the Italian mob?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know. I don't think you could.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't even think you can do that. What you just did.
I'm Italian. I can do it.
No,
you can't
not.
Do it. Yes, I am.
25%.
No, half. Can't take my fucking family heritage away from me.
He's trying to take your heritage away.
He's trying to take my heritage away, and we've stopped that. We've stopped saying.
You guys, Charlie's last name, Day, I believe was originally Del Giorno.
Yeah. Don't dig up my grandfather and strip him of his name.
I'm serious, though. It really was. That sounded like a joke because it sounds like the kind of pizza you would have in your freezer. But this was your actual family last name, Del Giorno.
Yeah.
I thought you were 25% Italian.
Yeah, you're right. Quarter.
I'm 25% Jewish, so...
So there you go.
Oh.
So I can drop a hard J whenever I want, I think.
I think.
Another iconic moment from this show that comes up a lot is us singing Bismarcky, rest in peace.
R.I.P.
On the show. Now, I remember very distinctly when I first heard that song when I was in elementary school, and it blew my mind.
It was a fantastic song.
I had never heard anything like that in my entire life. I guess I don't know that anything even close to that had ever been done before. Like it was like a pop song, but also rap.
And also it felt like he had a speech impediment.
You know,
well, he probably did.
Or something.
Maybe it was one of the first times that a mainstream audience was being introduced to someone who was sort of half rapping, half singing.
Yeah, half rapping, half singing, and in a very pop songy kind of way.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very unique.
It's a great song.
It's a great fucking song. It holds up, and that's why we put it in the show.
Well, I like that you were singing it, and you guys were on the same page, and then it's very stereotypically our show where you were then giving her notes. You were telling her that she was a little too high.
Yeah.
Right? Like the characters can't just...
Life
can't just do a thing. Yeah. Can't just do a thing.
Oh, you mean as the characters?
Yeah, as the characters.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe also in real life, but he was playing as the character.
I remember us getting in a really stupid fight.
Okay, here we go. Here we go.
Charlie said don't call them fights. He said call them
creative. Well, was it a fight or was it a creative disagreement?
I don't know. It was a creative argument. It was a creative argument. Do you guys remember, let me see if I can tee you guys up for this. So there's a moment where Dee and I are waking up after binging on crack. By the way, I don't know why we were so strung out on two rocks of crack cocaine. It makes no sense, but whatever. Let's move past that. Anyway, we're super strung out, and we wake up in the morning, and the alarm clock goes off. Yeah. Do you remember the argument that we had about the alarm clock going off?
Yeah.
You do?
I think so.
Wait, well, hold on. Well, okay, before
I,
you
I
say
think,
it.
I think so. Yeah, I'm not going to say with certainty, but right. I do believe I do.
Do you remember what it was?
I would say it's got something to do with the... with my, I could be way off. I feel like maybe Rob and I liked the idea of putting that rooster and the ring
yes.
and the Hawaiian song in there, mm-hmm. and you didn't. Yes.
Okay, no. What I liked was I wanted the Hawaiian song and either the rooster or the alarm sound, but not both. I was like, I'm cool with the rooster and the Hawaiian music, I'm cool with the alarm going off and the rooster. I'm sorry, the alarm going off and the Hawaiian song. What made no sense to me was the rooster and the alarm clock sound, because there's no alarm clock in the world that you can set to rooster and bell.
Let's fact check that. Let's fact that.
Megan,
I'm
you want to
sure
see?
Sure, we can find something.
No, this would be in 2006, so it's got to be up to 2006.
That's not an argument. That's a creative disagreement. And it's funny to look back on that and be like, God, that doesn't matter at all.
Oh, no.
No, it doesn't. It
like
doesn't.
Some
but
of these arguments move the needle. That one does not.
Well, I got a surprise for you guys I was waiting for it to be a surprise, but it might just be fun to expose it here on
you guys, I'm not going to lie. I'm very excited right now. A surprise?
Yeah. We have an episode this year. I'm not going to give anything away, but our characters wake up together uh-huh. after a very long, hard night. If you recall the episode that we shot maybe 4 weeks ago.
Uh-huh. Yep.
I saw a cut of the episode. As did Charlie, we gave notes.
Yeah.
And then I had an idea, and so I asked the editor to put in, I said, can you go back? We did an episode called
dare.
Dennis and Dee Go on Welfare.
Don't you dare.
Can you put in the rooster and the alarm clock?
We put in the rooster and the alarm clock. So let's see.
Are you fucking kidding me?
I'm excited to see that.
Well,
in
we didn't
the
lock
cut.
The episode. I just wanted to see if you guys liked it and thought it was funny.
My gut instinct on hearing you pitch that is that I'll feel as though I'll be more on Glenn's side in this moment. Where like, where in the Dennis and
Dee's, where is there a rooster? Where's the rooster coming from? There's no rooster.
The rooster you could chalk up to score.
Well, that's
like,
what,
score.
By the way, that's the argument.
What are we, a fucking cartoon?
This is the argument we were having. We were saying maybe it's score, maybe it's not source.
Like,
because by the way, how about this? Because this doesn't even make any sense. Why would you set an alarm clock?
Score is music, not sound effects.
No, it could be.
It could be whatever the fuck you want.
It could be a terrible record scratch.
We should just wake up to that.
By the way, no, we do. We've done swooshes. We've done. Gongs.
We've done gongs. We'll get into that.
Yeah,
that was racist. That's just straight up racist.
A gong is an instrument that's only used
traditionally.
You don't gotta use the gong. Right.
But I'll go you one further. It actually has to be score in the episode. It doesn't make in Dennis and Dee Go on Welfare. It doesn't make any sense. Why would you guys set an alarm clock to go off at 4 o'clock in the afternoon? You would have set it to go off at 9 a.m. so that you didn't oversleep.
No, that's not score. That's a mistake. Because there's an actual alarm bell that we are waking up to. Ring, 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 ring. And
yes,
a rooster.
But you could also.
And you guys are like, well, let's put it out. Like, let's add five other funny fucking noises in there to make it even funnier.
You could chalk it up to the that that they set it for the wrong time.
Yeah.
Because they're on crack.
This is probably exactly the conversation.
They were on crack.
Meant to wake up at, 6 a.m.
I would make the argument that sometimes things don't have to be logical. They have to be, visceral. They just have to make you feel something. And if the feel of it works, then great, it works. And, the logic of it, that's for someone else to decide.
Okay.
We do that all the time where we're like, well, this feels so broad to me. And you're like, motherfucker, yesterday we just,
I know. No, there's no, yeah.
There's no,
no
barometer.
There's no rhyme
there's
or reason.
No, it's either
there's
funny
no
or
playbook.
It isn't. It's either funny or it isn't to us. And that's all it is.
There was a scene, I think it's coming up, and we'll get this episode where Mac is constantly stopping the door that Barbara's trying to shut on him.
Yeah.
And Rob, I remember you and I in the mix building out the sound of we basically said there's a a doorbell and maybe some jingle bells on a wreath or something on this door, which you never see. But we layered in so many sounds because we're like, it just doesn't have the...
You wanted it to have the impact of him stopping the door. You wanted this him stopping the door to feel more harsh and strange.
Yeah.
And like, yeah.
It's the same instinct that everybody has. Every fucking television show and movie that's ever been made over the last 100 years, when somebody's sipping through a straw.
Oh, God, that drives me crazy.
You hear the ice sound every single time. You hear it like the end of the drink.
The end of the drink. No matter where they are in the drink, it's...
Yep.
And I'm like, the motherfucker, the drink is full. Because
you just wanted some life and sound to it. And then the other one is the one that we have fought against, yet we still have used it because it's effective, is the fucking feedback from a microphone. Like as if no one's ever used a microphone ever in their life. They have no idea. There's always feedback.
If you don't know what you're doing when you get up close to a microphone, it will go.
Yeah.
But only if you don't know what you're doing.
They're like, oh God. They go up to the microphone, you hear, wee. I don't know how to use a microphone. It's not that I don't know how to use it. It's that the microphone doesn't know how to use itself.
Right.
Or no, it's man versus technology and that there's comedy in the disconnect, you know, that we're not robots. So if you want to really get into the nuts and bolts of why that
still works, I guess.
Yeah.
So in this episode, guys, her plan is to go to New York to be on Broadway. She wants to be a Broadway actress, right? And, so we've established earlier on that she's a struggling actor. Why? What are you guys looking at each other?
No, I like that Charlie scratched his beard. That sounded good.
Oh, yeah, it did sound good.
It sounded like, I don't have that. Can you do it again? Can you get a little closer to the mic? I feel like that's an ASMR moment. That,
totally.
Yeah.
Charlie
totally
scratching is. His beard. You can make a fortune out of that, buddy.
Yeah, I don't know why, but yeah.
I don't want to attract that group.
No. What's going on with those people?
I don't know.
Oh, God, so weird. You guys were both struggling actors at one point, as was I.
Barely. I don't know if I ever really struggled.
I don't think either one. Well.
What did you, just came out hot? You were never struggling?
The second I got an agent.
I started working,
and I have not stopped.
Okay, so was there a time before you had an agent?
Yes.
Yeah. He worked on the Upper East Side for about 33 weeks at Rathbones or whatever.
Yeah,
the fuck
I worked
it's
there,
called.
But I also worked down the Cornelia Street Cafe. I also answered phones. So there was a year of grinding. And
a year. So what was the weird? Like, did you have some weird jobs?
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I answered phone for the Motown Digital Anthology. I didn't want to use
what?
So you know, remember
this is brand new.
You really?
I've never heard this before.
So you remember how?
You would call in to buy the anthology.
Like so some guy put all his money into this Motown thing, and he paid for the ad space that plays at midnight, and he had about 50 people in there answering phones, and he was making a big to do out of it. He's like, all right, here we go. This is it. The phones are gonna be ringing off the hook any minute. The ads are going live in 3, 2, 1. Silence. Dead silence. Maybe like one phone. You're like, is that me? No, that's over there. Maybe I answered 10 calls in a... By the way, we worked all through the night. Like till I think it was like, till sunrise almost. And maybe I answered 10 calls. The guy lost his shirt. We did it for like 5 different nights. And I didn't want to use my real name. I don't know. It felt sad to me. So I was just like, hey, this is Chuck. Thanks for calling to order the Motown Digital Anthology. How can I help you? Half the time, it was just people who just wanted to talk. It was so
sad.
Is
weird.
So that was a funny gig that I had.
Speaking of...
I'm so happy to hear that.
A new story for you, Rob.
A brand new story. I've never heard that before.
Okay, cool. Yeah, yeah.
Well, the good news is it'll be new for me again in 3 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't delete files as quickly as Charlie does, but I do delete them.
Yeah. Hey, have I ever told you about the time that I answered phones for the Motown Digital Anthology?
Oh, shit. Here we go.
There's
a bit.
That's a good bit right there.
Yeah, that's great. Charlie, yeah. I got a question for you.
Do you
hate it when people call you Chuck? Or
no,
are you okay with it?
Yeah, a lot of my friends. College buddies do that.
They call you Chuck?
Yeah.
Okay, because I kind of like Chuck. I never call you Chuck because I think there are some Charlies who don't like to be called Chuck.
Chaz.
I like that one. We call you Chaz all the time.
Yeah, I like all
Charles.
Those.
Mm-hmm. I call you Charles a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like
so
that.
So it was 1 year in New York of, really just day jobs and not working and then...
Any other weird ones?
It was funny. I got paid to play piano in a play.
Oh.
And it was the play was at SUNY Purchase, the college, and I had a friend who was a student there. Cheryl Bauer, she's been on the show, and she's married to Josh Driscoll, our editor.
Yeah.
So
she's also been on AP Bio. Did you guys know that Cheryl Bowers plays my character's mother on AP Bio? No, because you don't watch the show. Go ahead.
Yeah, no. So she was doing a play in her last semester at SUNY Purchase, and she said, hey, we need someone who can play the piano and can act. Can you come and do an audition? And I really wasn't playing the piano that much at the time. So I went up there and I kind of faked some stuff. Ooh. And
did you wear a funny little hat, like a funny little bowler hat?
I don't think so. And I got the gig, and the woman paid me to do that. And I commuted up there, and then I would write some like little songs for the play. And then I had lines in the play. And I remember her pulling me aside and she'd be like, you know, you really should consider going into this music thing. And I was like, well, I think I'm kind of going to do the acting thing. And she's like, yeah, I don't know.
I wouldn't.
The acting stuff.
I wouldn't.
It's like, yeah, all right, well, we'll see. We'll see.
I'll show you all.
That was exactly the kind of, you know, it's funny because that is the kind of thing where, you know, a certain type of person gets that feedback and goes, oh, shit. Yeah, maybe I shouldn't. Maybe I'm right. Another kind of person goes, I'll show them. I'll show them.
Yeah, I was in the category.
Yeah, and I do think that is that for whatever reason when your reaction to something is that, like it I think it can really fuel success, right? Because you just plow through rejection. You're just like they just don't get it. They just don't get it. Somebody's going to get it.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to get it one day.
Yeah. I think, and then directing Beanie Baby Addiction downtown.
Yeah.
Which we talked about, I believe, on the show. Okay. So, you know, and then, yeah, working at restaurants. So, cobbling together money wherever I could.
Were you a waiter?
I was a host. I was a busboy at Rathbones. Here's another story, man. Okay, so I was working at Rathbones. It was, what holiday? St. Patrick's Day. And lots of cops, firemen, you know, that kind of thing. So I'm working, I'm there at 4 a.m. I'm opening the joint, right? And we're packed, wall to wall, you know.
4 a.m.?
We're not packed at 4 a.m., but as soon as it gets going,
okay,
the place is packed. I was like, I'm opening, I'm hosing down mats, I'm getting the place ready. So I'm bar backing all day, and then the guy who comes in for the second shift calls in, he's sick or whatever. So I do a double. So I work 4 a.m. to 4 a.m. and I close up, right? These guys who were bartending were making money hand over fist. I mean, the place was packed. Anyway, at the end of the night, the guys go to tip me out. I'm like, wow, I'm going to make, I don't know, you know, I'm going to, well, Rob, you bartending. What do you think a barback's going to make New York City?
Same.
Yeah, well,
hours of working.
Oh my God. As a barback on the Upper West Side, when I would work just like the one night shift on a Saturday, I'd come home with $400 or $500.
Yeah.
As a barback. Which means the bartenders were making $1,500.
Right.
Yeah. I think they gave me $50.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I was so furious. I was like, tears in my eyes, furious, you know, but I didn't say anything at the time. I was just like, okay. And I'm going home on the subway and it's like thinking about it, like, oh, what am I going to do? And then I was like, all right, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go back up there. I'm going to throw a brick through the glass window.
You're going to take it out on the entire organization.
Yeah. Instead, yeah. I just never went back to work there. I just was like, all right, I'm done. And then I didn't call to quit. I just never showed up again.
Good.
And then I started waiting tables at the Cornelia Street Cafe. And I was very bad. You know, people, I would come to the table. I'm like, you had the fish? They're like, no, I ordered the chicken. I'll be right back. Let me go to the kitchen. Very terrible at that. And then very shortly after that, did a monologue showcase, and I got a commercial agent along with a regular agent that I'd gotten up at Williamstown, and just started getting like Foot Locker commercials and little things. And
what I wouldn't give to see a video of that monologue. Oh, what I wouldn't give.
It was good monologue. It was an Eric Bogosian monologue.
Feel like you nailed it?
Oh, yeah.
Do you think if you watched it now, you would... There's, I did some performances in college that I, where I was like, oh, I was amazing. And
no, I think it was great. It was
and like, watched them, because like, they have those at the library that you can check out.
Oh.
And I watched a couple of my performances and I was like, oh no, I was
I think it was
bad.
Good. No, it was funny. Cause I think that was the main thing about it. Like all those people took it very seriously. And mine was kind of funny. It's like this guy who walks up to a guy and it's like, excuse me, hey, I'm sorry, I couldn't happen to notice your shoes there, you know? And slowly begins to steal the person's shoes. And it's a very funny monologue. It's like, hey, you mind if I try those on? And, you know, it would get big laughs.
Well,
here's, then,
here's some good, you know, I'm always being asked by young actors who you know, pull me, they're like, how do you, what can I do to like break into the industry? I will say that, because I did the same thing when we did our showcases in college in front of managers and agents and casting directors or whatever. Everybody wanted to be serious and just these like very serious emotional scenes. And I was like, I bet you people are so sick of that. Like, and so I did two funny scenes.
Yeah.
And got an agent and a manager like instantly.
Think
and
about-
I do think so. If my advice to you, young actor, if you get into a showcase, be the funny one. Be the entertain them, because no one else thinks, everyone else thinks like I have to give an Oscar worthy performance in this, and it's just fucking boring and sad.
Yeah, think about it. You're the whoever's in there, you know, a commercial agent or whatever, a regular agent, and is watching monologue after monologue. They're probably saying, okay, who has a beautiful face and I know can work.
That's
so that's
part of it.
That's the shitty side of it. And then they're saying, who's an interesting type that will will pop, and then. If you're funny and you get laughs in the room, by the way, you'll know. Like, if you're not funny and you're doing your monologue and you're getting crickets,
you're gonna find out.
Well, then you know. But if you're if you can make a room full of people laugh, then suddenly someone says, well, there's that person has an ability that I can sell. So that, that was that.
Yeah. Yeah. Rob, what was the shittiest job that you had to do as a struggling actor to be?
The shittiest job? Well, I mean, I don't know that I had shitty jobs. I just had a series of waiting tables and bar backing and things
how
like
did
that.
How did you become an actor? Tell us that story. I mean, I know, but like, tell
I
us that story.
I actually don't recall. How did you get
well,
an
Rob was a model.
Rob was never a model.
Rob was a model. Well, he tried to be.
No, he didn't.
Model Search America?
They were looking for people who it was actors and models.
Okay,
and I fell into my friend Chris Backus, for example, fell into the category.
Chris Backus has gotten more play on this podcast.
I know
than
we talk
any,
about him quite a bit.
He's working
quite
all
a bit.
The time.
But he was my friend, and he was he's very clearly a model. But they were also looking for actors, like commercial actors. And I, the truth of the matter is, it was because I was 21 years old. And I look like I was 15.
Yeah, you were like, I can play little tiny babies.
Yes, which we've talked about. I think we've talked about
it. So they're like, he's a boy model.
No, so they were like, he can work, we can work him like an animal and he can be on a set for 13, 14 hours as opposed to a 15-year-old.
Oh, man.
So I started doing commercials that way.
Right.
And then I would do, but I didn't get as many as you did. And I didn't get them as quickly.
You guys got to look up on YouTube Rob's anti-smoking commercial from when he was, how old were you when you shot that, 19? No.
No, I was 20.
I mean,
dude. I was at least 21.
You look 13.
You look 13. But how did, wait, I'm sorry. How did you get in front of those people? How did you get?
Yeah, so there was this organization called Model Search America, which would like travel around the country. And they took an ad out in the newspaper.
Looking for beautiful
people. Looking for beautiful people and then looking for, seriously, like looking for character-ish type people. And they were like actors, models, whatever. And at first I thought, oh, this is like a scam. And then you look it up and there was like successful
people
that went
through it.
I'm going
to get diddled for sure. And I'm definitely going
to
get diddled.
And so you go to this open call, and I went to this open call in, this was in Philly. And then they were like, yeah, come back. And then you come back and you go to this like event, and then you wind up like talking to all of these agents, and they basically bring you into like the modeling agents, and then they were like, huh, no, not you. And then the commercial agents were like, oh, you have an interesting look, how old are you? And then once they found out how old I was and that I could work as a work as an adult that looked like a child, I signed with one of the biggest commercial agents in New York,
which was who?
SEM&M.
Right. Back to that. We're back to that.
Yeah. And then
Big Ed's book.
And then I started I got booked a commercial, and then I was like, I'm going to move to New York. And then I didn't work for 2 years.
Now, I have a two-part question. How many times did you get diddled? And the other part of the question is, did you just push past it? Or did you have to explain to them, I'm not actually what you want because I'm 23 years old? And then they were like, oh, well, that you ruined it for
there's
me.
A lot maybe of, that's the thing. There's a lot of disappointment because it's like, you're not breaking the law right now.
Oh, and that's part of
the excitement for them.
Right.
That they're like, oh, I'm ruining you for life. And I'm like, no, I've already.
No, I'm already ruined. Guy, I'm 52.
Yeah, I'm a grown man.
I was ruined years ago, right?
Yeah. I ruin other kids. What did you, Were you auditioning consistently?
Yes. I would see all of you guys at the same auditions. I just wasn't getting those jobs.
Were the commercial auditions too? Like some of those jobs, none of us were getting because they were big movies and we were unknown people. But the commercials, they were constantly casting.
They were. And I just wasn't getting them. Mm, you know, people have certain things that they want. And
you weren't, wasn't it?
I wasn't it.
You
looked too young to be in the beer commercial.
Well, once I then got old enough to look about 18, then they were like, well, there's lots of you.
Right.
Mm. And that was that. You know, right. I did my Law and Order and I did all the New York stuff.
Yeah.
Then that runs out and then you move to Los Angeles.
Glenn, did you never do a Law and Order?
I never even auditioned for Law & Order.
What?
I'm like one of the only actors in the universe who lived in New York and never did Law & Order. No. I think the first on-camera gig I did was Rescue Me. Oh, no, not Rescue Me. Sorry. What was Dennis Leary's show before that? Oh, God. What was the name of that show? Remember where I...
Oh!
Yeah.
Well, that was out here.
No, that was in New York.
Oh, it was?
That was in New York. The Job. Yep. That's the show. Megan pulled it up. The Job. It was a pretty good show. It was like a half hour drama comedy about cops. Well, it was a comedy, but it took place in a police squadron. Anyway, that was my first on camera gig. And then, and then I did like a ABC movie of the week called Monday Night Mayhem, where I played Dick Ebersol.
Yes. God, I remember that too.
Yeah.
Dick Ebersol.
Oh, man.
Wow.
You know, it was funny because I also looked very young, not as young as you did, but I had kind of a babyish face and I looked pretty young. And but I already had like massive amounts of chest hair, an obscene amount of chest hair it didn't match the face at all. It was like Tom Selleck level chest hair on the face of like a somebody who looks like he's 18 years old. And so I booked this Dick Ebersol role, and there was a scene where I was supposed to be sitting, and we were me and what was that actor's name? John Hurd, not Hurt, but Hurd. Rest in peace.
Rest in peace.
John Hurd and I were supposed to be at a golf course, sitting in these lounging chairs, looking over the golf course, smoking cigars, and watching people play golf, and having this very serious conversation about football. And when I showed up on the day to shoot that scene, they were like, they showed me to my dressing room, and I go in there. They're like, go ahead and get into wardrobe, and then we'll get you into hair and makeup. And I was like, great. So I opened the closet. They're like, yeah, your wardrobe's in the closet. I opened the closet. It's just a little teeny tiny pair of shorts, like a pair of like a bathing suit. And I was like, on a golf course? Like, what's going on? I pulled the AD aside and I was like, what is this? Why am I wearing a bathing suit on a golf course? And they were like, oh, they changed it. You're going to be in a hot tub now. And what I didn't want to say, because I was super embarrassed about it, was I was like, I have so much chest hair and I just don't want to show it. And I hadn't, I was so self-conscious about it because I was like, I wanted to be able to play young men. And yet I had the torso of like a 40-year-old man and the face of an 18-year-old, and it just didn't matter. And I remember I went to the hair and makeup trailer and I was like, hey, do you guys have scissors? And I fucking tried to trim the top part, because I knew it was only the top part of my chest hair that would show. And then and then we got in the hot tub and I dipped down as low as I could get.
You only trimmed the top.
I see what you're going. You're going for the shoulders.
I know what you're going for, but when you took your shirt off, was it just the top of your chest hair that was trimmed and then the lower half was full?
Full bush, yeah. But that's because I knew I was going to be in a hot tub, so only a certain amount of it was going to show, and that was, and I didn't have time. Like, I honestly didn't have time to do the whole thing.
So we're changing the block in here. You guys are going to be standing.
Yeah, that would have been, yeah. Yeah. Now you guys are me standing outside that. But like, I tried to get as low in that hot tub as I possibly could. Oh, it was so, like, guys, I was so self-conscious about it. I really was.
Sure. Of course.
Sure.
But how fucked up that is that they're like, oh, by the way, now, yeah, it used to be in the
that's
script.
That's not okay.
Yeah, and no, all of a sudden you're going to be okay. Half naked? Fuck
no,
you.
No, no.
Yeah, fuck
can't
you.
Do that.
Yeah,
you
but
can't
I didn't know, that. I didn't know fuck you at the time. I just of thought, course. Like, you know, yes,
well, that's,
sir.
Of course. But that's part of the, that isn't that part of the problem is like, nobody knows fuck. Nobody has the confidence to say fuck you because they think they're going to get fired, which, by the way, you might have.
I might have, yeah.
You definitely would have.
Yeah.
Back then.
Back then, fuck
yeah, probably. Yeah. Oh, guys.
Well, I'm bored.
Are you bored?
Well, yeah. I mean, I love you guys, but...
You're sick of it.
Yeah, and I think that the audience has had enough, and let's do the next one tomorrow.
Yeah, guys.
We did it.
We did it. We did it!
The end.